You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's a truth universally acknowledged that a person in possession of a summer home must be in need of a guest. Yes, 'tis the season of socializing, of sometimes inept hosts, occasionally insufferable guests, and weekends spent exploring the mysteries of human behavior. Are there some simple rules that we might all follow to make these visits with family, friends, and acquaintances less fraught and more enjoyable? Philip Galanis, who answers questions like that in his Social Cues column in the Style section of the Sunday New York Times, and is also the author of Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today, joins us now to find out. And we invite your calls to 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. And Philip, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Leonard. It's always a pleasure.
Is there a single most important factor in being a good guest?
You know, I actually, when I started thinking about it, I thought being grateful that someone, I mean, I can say this as someone who invites guests generally when there's a gun to my head or something like that, that someone is taking several days out of his or her life and including you in it, regardless if we want to go, how much fun we think we're going to have, the fact that a gesture like that has been made, it's superhuman practically.
Well, what about the other side? I know I really enjoy having people over for dinner, but then they leave.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if they stay too long, I get a little upset.
Right, right. This is a clash of kinds of worlds. I mean, the people who invite you to your house are typically people you might see at the office, or you might have dinner with them once a month. But then all of a sudden, for 72 straight hours, you are going to be with them, and so we have to figure out some ways to do it. I think it's also the questions that come into my column, and they start around June, and they get funnier to me and wackier. We all have blind spots, and the kindest thing we can do to our friends, for our friends, is help them navigate their blind spots and hope that they're going to help us navigate ours.
There was a list in the New York Times, your newspaper, 2 years ago that started with a good guest comes a little late and leaves a little early. Do you agree?
Well, you know, I certainly think that there's communication about when you're arriving and when you're going to leave.
Well, sometimes there are pickups involved and ferry schedules
and all that
such.
Sort of thing. That can help simplify things. I can tell you, having sat around on a Saturday morning, like a prisoner of Zenda in my own home because somebody did not appear at 10 o'clock the way they were supposed to, and I could have done a lot of other things. But generally I understand. Make the visit as painless as possible, and sometimes that'll mean making it a little shorter than you might have thought.
Yeah, well, Ben Franklin said guests and fish are similar. 3 days is the maximum for both.
Three days is probably, I think you're probably actually absolutely right about that. I got a letter last week from a lady who was going to be a hostess, and she invited her good friend, and the good friend and her husband said, yes, we'd love to come, but we've just had a litter of Dalmatian puppies, and we would like to bring our litter of Dalmatian puppies with us. Mm-hmm. And rather than thinking through like a quiet way to make that go away, like, oh, my husband's allergic or we're not really set up for puppies, the hostess just rescinded the invitation. So something that started out so kind, like an impulse to invite you around for a few days, turned into this Dalmatian puppy blind spot of, you know, now these two aren't speaking, and so we've got to really work out a solution for them.
But I suspect dogs and children are among the major sources of tension.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Dogs, children. Control is another very, very big thing. It's reminding me of a letter from a woman who is inviting a friend and her daughter, and the friend and the daughter are both obese. And the woman wanted to know if she could stop them
from eating what she thought was making them obese. Junk, you know, if junk food were to materialize, could she, as hostess, take it away? So you're right.
That sounds to me like you're asking somebody to be a bad host.
Exactly.
No, you don't eat potato chips in my house. You don't drink
in my house.
Soda in my house.
But so, the idea that we are ever in control of anyone, even ourselves, is quite a fiction. But being a host and being a guest means being willing to let those lines blur a little bit. Going with the flow is about the best thing a guest can do.
We have been getting comments from listeners. By the way, our number here is 212-433-9692. One person, William from Manhattan, writes in, "My wife and I have house guests every summer, and we've come to appreciate specific qualities in our guests. Helping to cook is good, but offering to take charge of one dinner is fantastic. Also, when feasible, it's wonderful when guests find things to do by themselves for a few hours each day. Much as we love our friends, having some time each day to get to our own things keeps us a bit cheerful."
Well, William really is walking the razor's edge, because he is, I think, said that first and second most important rules of being a good guest. The first one is to pitch in, and not, "Is there something I can do?" but just doing it.
Pick up the dishes and take
them. And bring them in.
But
and
then there
actually
are people who take
them.
Offense if you do that.
And they'll let you know. And then you won't do it again. And that'll be fine. But the other thing is, you know, when we have people to our homes for the weekend, we still have to respond to emails. We still have to call our mothers and our fathers. We still have to do the things that we need to do. So the idea that a guest can be self-sufficient for a few hours with a novel in her bag and is going to sit quietly in her room and let us read maybe or take care of some of our things, that's a house guest from heaven.
A listener left this tale of a terrible house guest on Facebook. He arrived very late after we waited around for hours and then ended up staying an entire week. I finally had to ask him when he was going to leave. He let the cat out. He left fingerprints on everything, left food out so there were ants all over the counter, etc. Really harrowing. Once we found the cat, I was able to say something pleasant, but it was a real strain on the relationship, and I'm exhausted from having to clean the house after he finally left. That's the person you just have to invite back.
Exactly.
Right?
That's Montgomery Woolley and the man who came to dinner, and you hope that it happens once in a life.
So how specific should the invitation be? Can the host say, for instance, "You should arrive after dinner on Friday and leave after breakfast on Sunday morning"?
Well, I think it can be a lot more fluid than that. I think it can be one of the things that guests have a really hard time with is when hosts will say things like, "Oh, come any weekend in August." Well, that's not really an invitation. And so it has to start with a specific thing, like, "How about the weekend of August 4th? And they say yes, and you say, "Well, that's terrific. Just, you know, to help us plan, when would it be convenient for you to arrive on August 4th? Or you can be the good guest and say, "When would it be convenient for me to turn up on August 4th? And there's a little negotiation that's going on, but these are people of good faith. These are people that you want to have in your home, and they're going to try to be as, make themselves as welcome to you as they can.
Martha Stewart once suggested as a gift a package
of
berries, ingredients for pie, and a beautiful pie plate. And the hosts were indignant. They exclaimed, "Oh, now you want us to make you a pie."
Exactly.
So what is a good gift?
A
bottle of wine?
You know something? I think anything that the group of you can use together is a wonderful gift. And if it's a bottle of wine, if it's some tickets to something that you can all go see together, anything, you know. But let me say, I'm not a big stickler when it comes to gifts, because I'm pretty picky, and the chances that somebody's going to bring me something I love is pretty. It's a token. I'd much rather have a note a few days later telling me that they really, that they loved staying with me and that these are the things they particularly, I'd much rather have that than a stupid, stinky, scented candle. No, I don't ever want to get one of those again in my life.
Well, a friend complained about a couple that always brought a bad bottle of wine and then insisted on having it with the meal. You can't insist on people drinking the wine that you've brought.
No, you can't. But you know something? People will do the list of crimes that people will commit in this world, insisting that that somebody drink the bad bottle of wine they brought, that's not going to even make the top 20 horrible things that a guest will do.
So how do you what is a polite way of saying, we're not going to drink this wine right now. We have others planned. We've already paired wines.
Thank you so much. Always. Thank you so much for this bottle of wine. We've worked out what we're going to pair things with this evening. But guess what? Tomorrow, I see us enjoying this with lunch or dinner, or I'm going to think of a special occasion to enjoy this one because it looks like a beauty.
We have a lot of people writing in, although we do invite your calls as well. Our number 212-433-9692.
Are they filled with rage? Are they filled
with... Well, they're all filled with the kinds of problems that we're discussing here.
Good.
A listener upstate left this comment. I recently invited a friend to spend the weekend at my place upstate. A few days before he was going to arrive, he said, "Oh, I invited my friend, someone he just started dating, to come. Didn't ask if that was all right or whether I'd mind."
Not cool. NC.
It's almost like bringing the puppies,
it's
right?
It's like bringing the puppies. You know, who knows where they're going to be sleeping. I think, personally, this is might be a style over substance kind of issue, because if I invited you, Leonard, and you said, "I'd love to come," and then you called me up a day later and said, "Would it be okay if I brought my girlfriend?" I'd say, "Of course." But if you just turned up with the girlfriend, or if it was the eve of your arrival and the girlfriend's mentioned then, it's
And we have a situation like that. Louise in Norwalk writes, "The couple who brought a dog unannounced, no warning, and then when the puppy urinated on the floor, they said, 'No, he didn't.'" Like there are random puddles of dog urine on the floor of our house.
Well, that's a big problem, and I've heard that's a big problem in Norwalk. Lots of just like unexplained dog urine.
What if another person? I'm reading these.
Yeah.
What if, as a guest, you unwittingly interfere with the host's way of doing things, and he or she lets you know about it? Is there a way to handle inadvertently stepping on a host's toes?
I just think, you know, I think you shouldn't be frightened of it. You should just say, "Gosh, I'm sorry," and move on with your day, because it's not that big a deal. It's never as big a deal. It's never as big a deal to the person whose toes have been stepped on as it is when we feel like we've hurt somebody's feelings or insulted them, and when that was the last thing we intended to do. So I think a hearty, "Gosh, I'm sorry," and moving out of the way is just the way to handle that one.
What if – I'm reading another one. What if guests cancel at the last minute because the weather is bad and then want to reschedule?
Well –
I mean, depending. Sometimes there's no choice.
I understand that. I mean, if the fiction here is that we're spending the weekend together, Leonard, because we have a lot of catching up to do, and we're going to enjoy some meals together, and maybe we're going to go to listen to a concert on a Saturday afternoon, what difference does it make if it rains? It's kind of headlining that they're going to a place that – it's kind of headlining the fact that they're only coming to see you because they wanted a weekend at the beach. And that's not so nice. At the same time, if it might be a lot easier if you're not all four of you underfoot in the same little house, and you'll be happier to host them when it's sunny. So
sometimes it's a relief when people cancel.
I can't tell from that question if the person – maybe she doesn't want to have them come back so badly. And so what a terrific thing. Oh, gosh, we're sorry. We're booked up for the month of August.
My guest is Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column in the Style section of the Sunday New York Times. He also has a book called Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. And we are talking about how to handle the visits during the summer, whether you are the host or the guest. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We'll be back with some of those calls and comments and some of my questions.
Terrific.
After
we
take
this.
A little break. We're back with Philip Galanis, who writes the Social Cues column in the Style section of the Sunday New York Times. Philip, I know people who say they really don't care much about the Times on Sunday, but they never miss your column.
Oh, that is music to my ears. Thank you.
We have a lot of calls coming in. Let's go to Michael from Queens. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I want to ask, how do you as a host or hostess address when a guest says something offensive, like saying, those idiots that occupy Wall Street, no, they want to tax the rich, they're wrong. And you say, how dare you say that? What is wrong with you? How do you that?
Basically, what you're saying is what happens when people whose politics you don't agree with insist on bringing it up and assume that you agree with them.
Well, I think that you can, I bet you can think of a million ways to change the subject. And if you can't, I think it's not such a big problem to say, listen, I think on this one, we're going to have to agree to disagree. So how about we find something we can agree on?
It's going to be a long weekend.
It's going to be a long weekend. And we're moving into a long political season, too. So, for sure.
What about this weather? Okay, Julie from Westchester. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I agree. It's really a wonderful thing to thank somebody after a weekend. However, I went out to visit some people in the Hamptons maybe around 10 days ago, and I just got so tied up I forgot to thank them. So I want to thank them in an email, but I want to know what's the best way to do it without looking too uncouth.
You know what the best way to do it now that it's like not so immediate?
Yeah.
Do you know that stationery that's been collecting dust in your desk drawer for about 2 years?
Yes.
Take a piece out.
Thank you.
Take a piece out and write it, because then it'll make more sense. It'll be like, yeah, of course it took her a little bit of time to wind up. She had to find that damn paper.
Great idea. Thanks so much.
People have been writing in and calling in. Caller wants to know if in all of these scenarios the guests are family. It is different.
Oh, yeah. I would wager that most of the house guesting questions that I get are from people who are not family. They're friends. We're so trained. I mean, by the time we hit our middle years, our adult years, we're so trained in the foibles of our family that this would be easy business to take care of your mother for a weekend. It's just like Thanksgiving. This is people who you're not used to cohabiting with, who all of a sudden you find yourself sharing quarters with for a weekend that could be beautiful or very rainy in August.
There are families in a wide range of generations. Some bring kids.
That is for certain.
Can you say we don't want to have kids?
Well,
people will be offended.
People will definitely be offended. People will definitely be offended. And I think we're living in about as child-centric a world as, I mean, I promise you, no one ever stopped what they were doing to worry about my brothers and me when we were kids, that we were kids. But now families organize themselves around kids. So I don't think that's probably the wisest move to make, to say, well, keep kids at home.
Amy in Montclair asks, what do you do if your children don't get along with your house guests' children?
Well, all of a sudden, Amy, you have like now you have to be a really good guest and you have to be a really good referee, because you want to the kids coming into the house, you have to neutralize them as much as possible. And I bet you can come up with a game or two that they can all like, or a movie or a something.
Is it rude, a person asks, to go away for a day? Will your hosts feel like they're operating a motel?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, because every host is going to feel differently about it. I think that one of the great things that house guesting forces us to do is communicate with people about things we're not. It's like being a teenager again. Mom, is it okay if I go to the Neil Young concert on Friday and stay over until Saturday morning? It's like that again. These hosts are kind of like a little bit like parent figures. And so you have to say, would that be okay? Would you like it some free time? Would you like a little vacation from us? Or did you have something planned that day?
Well, one person wrote in, why do people even have guests? Is it an obligation or guilt? Is it possible to have a no-guest policy?
Well, I do know for a fact it is possible to have a no-guest policy because a very good friend of mine has a no-guest policy. And I think after the first year or two of the person having the house, I think people just stop thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think a lot of us work really, really hard during the week, and the last thing we want to do is socialize nonstop all weekend. I like the occasional guest. I mean, very occasional guest, but I think that there are lots of reasons.
We go now to Sally from Westchester. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, Sally. You have a story to tell us?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk to you about really bad guest experiences. I've lived here for a number of years and had a lot of visitors over from England. And the worst one was my brother, who started off fairly moderately by just, it was in the wintertime, and he felt the house was too hot, so he left all the windows open to cool it down rather than turning down a thermostat. He then spilled a cup of coffee on a white rug. He then broke my son. He dislocated his hip accidentally and landed us up in the emergency room.
I hate it when accidental dislocations happen, right?
Oh, no, it's such a pain.
Well, folks from England, too, when you have your guests, they come and stay for a really long time, too, right, Sally? How long did he stay for?
2 weeks.
Yeah, that's a long time.
And he rounded the whole thing off by burning down my kitchen.
Burning down your kitchen?
Yes.
Yeah. I think you've just created a pilot for an NBC sitcom.
That's what I was thinking. Well, so what did you do? Did you write him out of your will?
No, it took me a little while, but I forgave him because I love him very much.
Can I tell you a brother-sister guesting story that'll make you feel a little bit better, Sally?
Please do, yes.
A brother is gay, and he's going out with a guy, and he brings his boyfriend to stay at the family house in the Adirondacks. And so in love are they, so in love are they. The weekend ends, they break up, the brother is shocked, only to find 2 weeks later that the boyfriend is now going out with the original guy's sister. And the mother is writing saying, the sister now wants to bring this same guy as a guest, and the brother is threatening a hunger strike if anything like this is going to happen. At least your brother did not make a move on your husband. Can we think of it positively that way?
Thank you for calling us, Sally. What do you do if the guest's children behave in a way that's forbidden in your house, like text at the dinner table or come to dinner with earphones? And can you forbid people from bringing their cell phones?
I think it's dangerous. I think it's better to have a word with the parent and say, we don't like our kids to be doing these things at the table, and it would be a really big help to us if you helped us enforce that policy, or otherwise the host kids are going to have a lot of ammunition when these people leave the next, you know.
And then there are the food problems.
That's
when somebody comes with food restrictions. Should you tell your host your teenage daughter is a vegan or just arrived with their own supply of tofu?
This morning I tweeted that I was going to be on at Leonard Lopate, and did anyone have anything they wanted to say? And somebody tweeted milk 1%, 2% soy, almond, lactate, half and half. I've had it with supplying every brand of milk under the sun to my guests. And I actually think that there are some things that are, you know, and it's going to differ on every guest and every host. But if somebody said to me, you know, I don't eat beef, I'd make fish. That wouldn't be a big deal. But when it gets to be much more elaborate than that, I think it's maybe incumbent on the guest to maybe bring a little basket of stuff that the daughter will eat.
What about supplying things like toothpaste? Do they have to go in the guest bathroom? Because I always bring my own toothpaste in expectation of there not being any there. Sometimes there is, sometimes
there isn't. It's funny that you would say toothpaste, because that is something that I do not provide. And I'm now wondering, maybe I should. I provide a shampoo and conditioner and body wash and, you know, Q-tips and things like that. But I have not done toothpaste because I think we're all so in love with our own brands.
A listener in Washington Heights asks, should you offer to strip the bed afterward?
Again, I think it is if anyone ever said to me, should I strip the bed, I would say, oh, of course not. If they just stripped the bed, I would be delighted.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be one less thing for me to have to do?
Susan in Manhattan, in Morristown writes, visiting Cincinnati and my son and new daughter-in-law for a three-day weekend. During one evening, we'd be going out to a restaurant for dinner with the son, the daughter-in-law, and with her parents. Who should pay for dinner out? Should I pick up the tab or for her parents as well?
If you can afford to, I think it would be a tremendous gesture. And if not, I think you could turn to the parents and say, shall we treat our kids to this dinner and split it? You are staying at the house. It's really terrific when a house guest takes us out for a meal or, you know, as the person earlier wrote, just takes total charge in preparing a meal. But if taking the whole family and the in-laws out is too much, I don't think you need to be shy about that. Everybody knows we're living in new times.
Well, money seems to be a big issue. Another person wrote, we vacation in a place where families maintain charge accounts at the local deli and market. What do you do if your adult siblings start charging on them?
Well, fortunately, they're your sibling, and so they've heard much worse from you than please stop charging on our account. I think that's pretty – I put that in the nervy category and should not be done. Guests should not be charging things to their hosts.
Maud in Park Slope writes, a dinner guest got extremely angry with me because I hadn't warned her that I had a cat, which she was allergic to. Was it my responsibility to warn her that I have a cat or her responsibility to ask in advance?
I think it's if somebody is allergic to a creature that is fully probably a part of your family, I'd say it's more likely if you've got a big allergy, I think it's the guest's idea to say, by the way,
I'm allergic to cats. Linda from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
We're well.
Good. Hi, Philip. I have a question. I guess it's a comment and then a question.
Okay.
And I think I just want to put this out there. I am a sober woman who used to enjoy a lovely bottle of wine. I loved wine more than anyone else. However, I find that since I've become sober and I throw a dinner party with four people, guests in particular that may not know me, which I often do in my business, I invite, you know, clients over to have dinner or, you know, snacks on the roof. I end up with 10 bottles of wine that I can't drink, and I'm always apprehensive to say when the guest hands me the bottle of wine, you know, oh, I don't drink. You know, instead I'm very gracious and I say, oh, how lovely, what a wonderful thought. I think it's assumed in our society that the bottle of wine is like the perfect hostess gift.
I was wondering
if you had any suggestions, because I would love, or what I would prefer, is someone to bring an appetizer if it's like a little dinner party, or bring, you know, even a dessert, or, you know, and I know you said I don't like that smelly candle, or a candle, or I love the idea of a thank you note, or just a note.
But doesn't she have to actually tell the guests that she would love for them to bring an appetizer or a dessert?
Absolutely.
Because people do not know that. They assume that you are supplying all the food unless you tell them otherwise.
I think Linda's made a good point that in our culture, people think that they should arrive with something, and a bottle of wine feels like a very benign thing to bring. But I also understand you might not, Linda, want to say to a stranger, by the way, I'm sober, so don't bring the wine. Don't bring me a bottle of wine. That might be a little too much disclosure. That might be more than you're comfortable with. So if this is with strangers, I think I'd handle it the way you're handling it. Take the bottle of wine, say thank you so much, and find another use for it. But if you feel comfortable saying things like, we're going to, you know, if someone ever should say to you, is there anything I can bring? Say, yeah, please stop in at the bakery and bring a great loaf of bread or something like that.
But can't you just offer the wine to other guests or repurpose it and take it as a gift when she goes? If it's a nice bottle of wine, somebody else is really going to appreciate it.
Absolutely. But, you know, maybe Linda doesn't want to be trucking in the wine trade.
Okay, well, let us go now to Gretchen from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My son was told that he could bring several guests to a cabin at the lake, and he invited 8 friends, and they invited friends, and they invited friends, and we had 32 house guests.
Oh, wow.
For a 4-day weekend.
How old is your son?
Well, at the time he was about 25, and so
old enough to know better.
Old enough to know better, but not totally surprising if the like crop of bromance movies is to be trusted in any way.
Well, it was absolutely wonderful. The kids, the young people, were from Boston and New Jersey and California. They came from all over, and not unheard of for our family to have a big crowd, and the guests were wonderful.
Well, you're getting a standing ovation from Leonard and me because we think you're rolling with it in a big old way. Congratulations.
I know I'd be mumbling about it for weeks afterward.
I know.
As a guest, should you feel free to snack from your host's refrigerator?
I think it's always better to ask the first time, and depending on the response, you know how to conduct yourself for the rest of the weekend.
And you also have to ask if you want to use the house computer, for example.
Oh, for certain. For certain. Because there could be, you know, sensitive things on that computer.
Is a host expected to make and serve their guests 3 meals a day?
No. I don't think they are. I think it is. I think the worst quality in a house guest is passivity. The ones who are lined up at 8 a.m. on your sofa, sitting in a row, looking at you saying, Leonard, what are we going to do? What are we doing now for the rest of the day? So breakfast, for sure. You make sure you have a pot of coffee going and some toast or cereal or blah, blah, blah. And I think it's fine to say, why don't you folks wander into town and look around, get yourself a lunch, and we'll meet back here at 4 o'clock for drinks and we'll start making dinner.
We've run out of time. There's so many more questions coming in, but we've solved
that.
A lot of problems.
We've solved so many, and it almost assures me another birth at Leonard. I couldn't be thrilled. Couldn't be happier to hear that there are more questions.
One of my staff members wonders why you call it just social cues. Shouldn't it be P's and Q's? Philip Galanis's A Social Cues column is in the Style section of the Sunday New York Times. His book is Social Cues, How to Survive the Quirks, Quandaries, and Quagmires of Today. We thank you all for calling in. And, as the summer progresses, maybe we'll have more kinds of problems to deal with.
Couldn't be happier, Leonard. Thank you.